Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, and welcome once again to History Dweebs. I'm Tim. Thank you for joining us today. And I have with me, as always, the blue hair beauty, Brandy. How are you today, Brandy?
I'm well, thank you.
And as always, the distinguished Colonel Charles Beauregard Hawk Walters III, affectionately known as the Southern Gentleman. How are you today, Colonel?
I'm colder than hell, Timmy.
Are you colder than hell? You were colder last time we talked.
Well, it's cold out. It's like 4 degrees out. Where the hell is the global warming?
That's what I want to know. Minus 4 degrees
outside. It's minus 4 degrees. We don't even have 4 degrees. We owe somebody 4 degrees.
We're in debt.
Yeah. We're in the hole.
Yeah. We're in the hole. Okay, yeah, it is very cold out. Okay, so today's topic is Tokyo Rose. Actually, we're going to talk about propagandists in general. We're going to talk about propagandists during the Second World War. But the main focus will be on Tokyo Rose, and we'll talk about tell you a little bit about her story. But before we start that, I just want to check to see if my colleagues here have any shout-outs that they want to give. Colonel, do you have a shout-out? You usually do.
I don't have a shout-out. I do have a new sponsor this week. My friend, Jimmy Wicks. Now, everybody that went to high school with him, we know him as Spider.
Oh, I know that guy.
You know Spider.
I do. Okay.
Spider so, mix.
Anyway, Spider was listening to the show, and he thought, you know what? I'm a sponsor. And he called me up. This is the first time I ever got a call. And Spider owns the Little Critters Bovine Fertility Clinic up in Seaman, Ohio.
I didn't realize there was a fertility clinic for...
Well,
critters.
I did not either. And in talking to Spider, now apparently, you know, you got your bunch of bulls, you got your bunch of cows, and you think you're going to have some calves, right? But
normally,
just like in the real world, sometimes you got an ugly cow. Ugly cow, nobody.
That was Bessie's problem.
Yeah.
From Borden.
Exactly. She's an ugly cow.
She's ugly.
The bulls don't want to mess with her. She got the saggy teats. Nobody, you know, it's like, no, let her go. What are you going to do? You take her over to Little Critters, they will fix her right up. She'd be popping out a calf like 3 weeks later.
Now, do they...
3 weeks?
Is that a matchmaking service, or do they actually perform the...
It's a fertility clinic.
It's a fertility clinic.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So there's no... So Betsy is still kind of left out in the cold.
No, Spidey get him a big turkey baster, just...
Brandy, do you have any shout-outs today?
I have a very special shout-out today. The world actually lost a very special lady to me, my great aunt Nita.
Aww.
Oh, we're sorry to hear that.
Yes, thank you. But my shout out goes to Sweet Dee, my grandmother, who is currently attending her sister's funeral in a Walmart sweater and a pair of sweatpants.
As I would picture Sweet Dee.
As you would picture Sweet Dee, I hope when I'm 86, I can just say, screw you guys, and go anywhere I want in a pair of sweatpants.
Well, I think that's the beauty of being 86, is you just say, screw you guys.
Well, we're sorry about your aunt, but hello, Sweet Dee, and...
Sweet Dee doesn't listen.
I know, she's not going to listen, but if someone will tell her.
Maybe.
But,
Maybe.
What gets
might,
around?
She might hit you.
Well.
She's kind of crabby. So, shout out to my only and favorite grandmother, Sweetie.
And
we're very sorry about your aunt.
We are.
Thank you.
I'm sure she was a fine woman.
She's a neat lady. She had a pet squirrel.
Did she?
Yeah, like a real one. They kept inside.
Did you feed it peanuts?
And yes. Stuff? Yes. They
the
found
scar
it.
Rocky?
They found it as a baby. I don't remember his name, but they found it as a baby. It was hurt.
Was it Nibbles?
And they nurtured it back to healthy. It had its own big cage in their house with a big hunk of tree, and he was as happy as he could be.
So they brought a hunk of tree into the house.
They did bring a hunk of tree in the house.
Okay, so, and I have a shout-out, a couple of shout-outs. First to Thad in Cincinnati, actually in Claremont County. I believe he lives in New Richmond.
Thad,
yeah. He works with the Roller Girls.
Thad?
I know you're
Dad
a big...
Can hook,
you're a good,
hook us
you're,
up with the Roller Girls?
Well, I don't know if he could hook us up with them, but I know you're a big fan of the Roller
I'm
Girls.
I'm a big fan of the Roller Girls.
Yes. And also to a special listener named Noah, who listens to every podcast, even though he's only like
three.
Okay.
Three.
I'm sorry, Noah. Okay, so...
Noah, handsome little guy.
He is a handsome little fella.
All he needs is a tracksuit.
He needs a tracksuit. Noah, I like to call Noah my little Dago.
Okay.
Look at him. He looked like a little tiny baby version of John Gotti.
That's my child. Like, he does not look like John Gotti.
He's like gold chains and stuff. Oh, he's, necklaces.
He got the pimp hand over here. He got it going on.
All right. Well, okay, Noah. Thank you for listening, Noah. And now we'll get on to the show. The topic of today's podcast again is Tokyo Rose, although we're going to talk in general about some of the other propagandists in World War II. And the propagandists, basically, they were broadcasters who worked for the German and Japanese government and broadcasting propaganda back to the United States in an effort to lower the morale of the U.S. citizens or citizens of the Allied nations and the soldiers. So we're going to start, though, the most famous being probably Tokyo Rose, but we're going to start with Axis Sally. And, Brandy, you want to tell us a little bit about Axis Sally?
Axis Sally was born Mildred Elizabeth Sisk in Portland, Maine. And she actually changed her name to Gillers in 1911. When she was 16, she moved into Ohio, and she enrolled at Ohio Wesleyan University in 1918. She went to study dramatic arts, but she left before she graduated, as most of us did. We took some time. She then went to New York City and lived in Greenwich Village.
The Big Apple.
The Big Apple. She took a bite out of it.
Yes.
Went to Greenwich Village and worked at some low-skilled jobs to finance her drama lessons, as they all do.
She was going to be an actress.
Of course she was.
Low-skilled.
I'm not saying she was a hooker.
We don't know that.
I read low-skilled as a hooker.
I'm not saying she was a hooker.
I know some very highly skilled hookers, so I would not necessarily...
I have concerns about that. I'm not even saying she was a go-go dancer.
Okay. But anyway, she moved to New York. She wanted to pursue a career in acting.
She did. She toured with some stock companies, and she appeared in vaudeville, but she really didn't get her theatrical career off the ground. She left for France the first time in 1929, and she went over, and she was an artist model in Paris. And she came back, and then in 1933, she left the U.S. again. And
well,
found
is.
Work.
She's moving all over the place.
She is. She's
like
everywhere.
You, Timmy. She's just jumping all over.
She left the U.S. again in 1929 and kind of went around doing some odd jobs until finally in 1934 she moved to Dresden, Germany to study music. She was later employed there as a teacher of English at the Berlitz School of Languages in Berlin.
Yeah, Berlitz has been around a while.
They still exist?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in 1940, she obtained work as an announcer with the, they call it the RRG, and it's the Reichs Rundfunk Gesellschaft.
Yeah, it's whatever.
It's the German state radio.
Yeah, German state radio. The Nazi state radio.
Sure. So she got a job there. She really liked it. She was very happy. But in 1941, the State Department, U.S. State Department, started advising that American nationals needed to return home. She actually chose to stay in Germany because her fiancé, Paul Carlson, was a naturalized German citizen and said he would never marry her if she returned to the United States. So she stayed in Germany.
Well, I've seen her picture. I wouldn't have married her either.
She stayed for love.
She stayed for love.
That's an honorable thing.
Unfortunately, shortly after that, he was sent to the Eastern Front and died.
Oh,
well, you know.
So she kind of got screwed on that deal.
Made a bad choice.
Tough times. She did make a bad choice.
On December 7th, 1941...
That's my birthday.
Comments
by the way.
Or concerns?
Anybody?
You were. I know you.
Not
were
1941. I was born.
You were born on Pearl Harbor Day. Gillers was working in a in the studio when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. She had a breakdown in front of her colleagues and denounced the Japanese, and just told them that the Japanese were shiftless, and they were going to bring them problems. She later said that she knew such an outburst could send her to a concentration camp. So she was faced with the prospects of joblessness or prison, and so she wrote an oath of allegiance to Germany and returned to work. And initially, her duties were limited to announcing records and participating on chat shows. Up until 1942, her broadcasts were pretty apolitical. Then they got a new program director. His name was Max Otto Koschwitz. Max.
Max Otto Koschwitz?
Koschwitz. That's what it says.
Sounds like a Jewish name.
I don't know what to tell you. He was the program director in the USA Zone, or the RRG, and he cast her in a new show called Home Sweet Home. And soon, amongst her GI listeners, she acquired several lovely nicknames, some of which were Berlin Bitch, Berlin Babe, Olga, and Sally. But the one that became the most common was Axis Sally. It probably came from the time she went to describe herself on the air, and she just said, I'm an Irish type, a real Sally. There was another lady that was sort of doing the same thing, and she was using the name Sally. She was over in Italy. She was an Italian-American woman named Rita Zucca, and a lot of times the women were thought to be one and the same, so people got them confused. She did this show, Home Sweet Home. It was a regular propaganda program that was to make the American forces in Europe feel homesick. A running theme of the broadcast were the infidelities of soldiers' wives and sweethearts while the listeners, the GIs, were stationed in Europe and North America.
Which actually was a big problem.
I imagine it was.
Yeah, they would. I mean, they would say things like, while you're here fighting for your country, your wife is home sleeping with a draft dodger and that type of thing.
Which, in many cases, was the truth.
Well, you can't expect us to last, forever.
Well, you were supposed to be in the factories riveting and stuff. And
well, nevertheless.
But then we went home later after we riveted. You can only rivet so much before it really starts to get to you.
I'm just saying.
Only so much riveting can be done.
There was Guadalcanal.
So much riveting.
Men getting blown up, and you was at home whoring it up. Hanging out at the ice cream
I was ship, building boats.
Downtown.
We'll talk about that later, but we were building boats.
Okay, building boats, yeah.
Yeah, we were building boats.
You had the power tools. Why'd you have to go find another
go get a little
man?
something. So
draft dodgers.
Yeah.
Draft dodgers.
Shut,
yeah.
Shut your dirty word hole.
I'm just saying.
Shut it.
Milkman is not an essential job.
It's really not. I never liked them. Whatever. Okay, so anyway. She also did a program called Midge at the Mic, and it started
Midget at the
Midge.
Mic.
Not Midget.
No.
Midge.
Okay.
Midge.
Midge. They could have put anybody there.
Midge
it was a midget.
At the mic. Well, yeah, you would know.
Yeah, no.
Unless they couldn't reach the mic, you could just barely hear them. You had to really turn it up.
Well, they could sit on a stool.
Yeah, well, some phone books. So anyway, so she did Midge at the mic.
Okay.
The broadcast from March to the late fall of 1943, in which she played American songs interspersed with defeatist propaganda, anti-Semitic rhetoric, and attacks on FDR.
Yeah, so, I mean, with Sally, as we'll talk later about Tokyo Rose, but with Sally, she was legitimately saying these things.
Yeah.
I mean, it was and there was recordings. It wasn't.
Yes.
It wasn't.
Yeah.
Something
no, she was,
that it was made up.
She was getting it. Yeah, she was getting
now
it.
Now, that's just how. I got a problem with this. Now, you want to attack America. You want to do whatever. You know, say, okay, your wife's, you know, knocking boots with the milkman who's draft dodging, whatever.
Knocking boots.
But they was making they made fun dodgers? Of a crippled man. FDR. He was a cripple. He had the polio.
He didn't have the polio.
He had the polio, and they're making fun of a crippled man.
I don't know what kind
of animals are these people?
She was a bitch. The GI's letterbox and medical reports was also one that she did in 1944. It was directed at the U.S. home audience, in which Gillers would use information on wounded and captured U.S. airmen to cause fear and worry for their families. After D-Day, June 6, 1944, soldiers wounded and captured in France were also reported on. Gillers and Max worked for a time with Chartres and Paris for this purpose, visiting hospitals and interviewing POWs. In 1943, they toured POW camps in Germany, interviewing captured Americans and recording their messages for their families in the U.S. The interviews were then edited for broadcast, as though the speakers were well-treated or sympathetic to the Nazi cause. So this went on for a while, and she was kind of an asshole. But then everything kind of changed for her when Max died in August of 1944. And her broadcast after that, they lost something. They became lackluster and repetitive. And she remained in Berlin until the end of the war, but her last broadcast was on May 6, 1945, just 2 days before the German surrender. So the German surrender and her arrest came after the U.S. Attorney General dispatched Prosecutor Victor C. Warheide to Berlin to find and arrest her. He and the Counterintelligence Corps, the CIC, which...
There's some scary bastards right there.
I would assume they are much like the CIA.
Yeah, forerunners of the CIA. Mm-hmm.
So they had he and his special agent Hans Winston. They only had one solid lead. Was one of the guys that she visited at the prison camp while she was looking for interviews. And when she introduced herself, she called herself Midge. Midge at the mic.
Okay.
She was going around under an alias, and they followed her around and da-da-da. However, she was trying to sell some of her furniture at a secondhand shop, and that's where they got her. She was indicted on September 10th, 1948, and charged with 10 counts of treason, but only 8 were proceeded with at her trial, which began on January 25th, 1949. They just played her programs. Looks like they just played her programs to prove their case. They really didn't have to do a whole lot. The defense argued that her broadcast stated unpopular opinions but did not amount to treasonable conduct. It was also argued that she was under the hypnotic influence of Max.
Ooh.
Yeah, Max
Otto.
Well,
Max was a powerful guy.
He was, and therefore not fully responsible for her actions until after his death.
The old hypnotist defense.
Yeah. I've been hypnotized.
Yeah.
I used that before.
What do you use if she's an asshole after the guy dies?
Well, it doesn't wear off.
Well,
obviously,
evidently it did.
He can't just snap his fingers
and
bring her back.
But
he's
what
dead
they're
now.
Saying, but what they're saying is it did wear off. Like, she wasn't responsible for anything until after he died. So, on March 10th, 1949, she was convicted on one count of treason. And she was sentenced to 10 to 30 years in prison and a $10,000 fine. Let's see. She served her sentence in the Federal Reformatory for Women in Alderson, West Virginia. She became eligible for parole in 59 but did not apply until 61, and she was released on June 10th, 1961. While she was in the pen...
I was like one month old.
Yeah. Yeah, nice.
But she probably got out to see you.
She did. While she was playing Orange is the New Black, she converted to Roman Catholicism. She went to...
She saw the other ways.
When she got out... Yeah, so she converted. When she got out, she went to live at the Our Lady of Bethlehem Convent in Columbus. She taught German, French, and music at St. Joseph's Academy in Columbus.
I've been to that convent.
She completed, in 1973, she returned to Ohio Wesleyan to complete her degree, and she died of colon cancer at Grant Medical Center in Columbus on June 25th, 1988.
1988? She was like 134 years old?
She was 80-odd years old.
She lived a long life.
Yeah, she did live a long
life. She did, but I bet she didn't wear sweatpants all over Hell's Half Acre to go to funerals and whatnot.
You
think Dee's got a badge on?
Do I think Dee has a badge on?
Is wearing her
Walmart badge?
Yeah.
I hope not. But you know what? I'll kiss your ass if she ain't wearing house shoes.
Okay. Or
Snuggie.
Yeah.
Okay. So thank you, Brandy, for Access Sally.
You're welcome.
And I'm almost scared to do this in this next one, but Chuck, there were also male broadcasters broadcasting propaganda, and one by a fellow by the name of Michael Joyce. You want to tell us about him?
Well, if you're going to ask me when he was born, I can tell you when he died. I don't really care.
Just tell the story.
Let's just get on to what he did.
Briefly.
Now, he was a strange guy. Okay. He was American by birth, Irish by blood. He went over to Ireland. Now he was a Catholic, all right. But he decides to fight on the Protestant side, the Unionist side, all right. Now you can say what you want about the Irish, all right. But they drink, they act a fool. They don't pay the bills on time.
That's your family.
That's your family.
It is my family too.
This is my family, and so they don't pay the bills on time. They drink. If they would stay so. But
sometimes they get typhoid and carry it around.
Oh, they do all kinds of crazy stuff.
Bullshit.
But the one thing they usually can count on is they're loyal. They're loyal. Yeah,
right.
You know what he was like? He was like the guy who had to hate everything that was popular. Yeah. Badmouth Santa Claus.
Against the home team.
Yeah, he didn't root for Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Right. I mean, he was just an asshole is what he was.
Trip the Easter Bunny.
Yeah. I mean, it was that kind of thing. He'd be the one that run around and tell little kids, like at 3, 4 years old, they ain't no Santa Claus.
Yeah. Well, not a nice guy. No, so how did he get into the propaganda business?
Well, he lied and became a British citizen.
Dick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So while he was over there, he joins this fascist group over there.
Oh, so he's a fascist too.
Oh yeah, he joined Oswald Mosley's British fascist party because if you're going to be an asshole, you might as well go to Holland.
Which had they had a pretty strong membership. But
they did, yeah. They did, and they were very anti-Semitic group.
Most fascists and most Nazis are.
And see, the colonel can't tolerate anti-Semitism.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
He just don't like it.
Wow.
You know, the Jews is a fine people.
You just don't like Irish.
I'm Irish myself.
Right. You don't. You're self-hating.
No, I'm just saying I recognize our own flaws.
Okay.
And the one thing, we are loyal, and this bastard, he wasn't loyal to anybody.
So you're all like terriers.
Yeah. So he starts doing, and he takes. Now there was four or five guys doing this propaganda show, mm-hmm. and they all was called Lord Ha Ha, Lord Ha Ha,
Ha Ha, Ha Ha,
Ha
Ha,
Hee Haw, Hee
Haw.
There was Lord Hee Haw.
No, was it Lord
Ha Ha,
Ha Ha,
Ha Ha,
Lord Ha Ha,
Hee Haw.
Yeah. And he would come on. He'd be with his he was Irish, so he can't do no British accent. But he tried his best, and it'd be like, "Jiminy calling, Jiminy calling."
I don't like that. Don't do that anymore.
That's the Colonel's British accent.
Sort of like someone trying to fake a Southern accent. It just doesn't work.
Sometimes
it's stupid.
So he would get on there and just broadcast propaganda just like everybody else. And finally, you know, there were four or five guys that were Lord Haw-Haw, and but he really became known as the most famous. And actually, he started giving his real name. I mean, that's the kind of balls this guy had. He just threw out his real name out there. I'm one.
But he wasn't broadcasting. I mean, he wasn't broadcasting from Berlin, right?
He was broadcasting from Berlin.
Oh, I thought he was. I thought he was.
No, he went back to England, then he went back to Germany, uh-huh. Then he started broadcasting from there. And then the war, you know, the war was over, and the British came and snatched his ass up and said, you know what, we're going to try you for treason. Now, his lawyer said, you can't do that, because he can't have committed treason, because he lied to be a British citizen. So he's really an American.
He didn't use the hypnotic defense.
No, he tried to use a scrambled citizenship you know, like...
You can't commit treason if you're not a citizen.
Yeah, it's like me committing treason against Zimbabwe.
Right.
You know, which I think Tuesday I may have, but if I were a citizen.
Yeah.
So, but he didn't work, because nobody... And you know why it didn't work?
Why?
Nobody liked him. Nobody liked him. His own defense attorney. He was like the New Orleans Axeman. His own defense attorney said, he probably...
Jake Bird's attorney.
Yeah, so he... So they took him out to a tree and hung him.
So right
he was found guilty of treason, and he was hung.
He was... I don't know if he was hung, but they hanged him.
Okay,
he might have been hung, he might not have been hung. I can't say that for sure.
He was hanged.
I have not seen pictures of the corpse, but I know he was hanged.
Okay.
Okay,
thank you for that enlightening story about Lord Haha. So far we had Axis Sally in Germany. And
I believe, now, this dates all the way back to the Confederate, you know, the Union War with the Confederates, when there was Polk Salad Annie.
She had a radio station in the Civil
War.
But
she used to send out taunting telegraphs. To the other side.
I see.
Polk Salad Annie. That's where that came from.
I see.
Almost
in every conflict, there are propagandists. And in Vietnam, there was Hanoi Hannah. I believe Korea had a radio host. But most of these were, most of these names that we come up with,
We didn't come up with
Lord
that.
Hee-haw.
Lord
Hee-haw. Lord Hee-haw.
Lord Ha-ha. Axis Sally. They were names given by...
He used to get on there and he would be like, gloom, despair, and
agony on me.
That is not true.
Here come the garments.
I love that show.
Okay, so back on track. We do all of this to say that... Each war has its own form of propaganda. And in, like, as I said, in Vietnam, when the U.S. was in the Vietnam conflict, there was Hanoi Hannah. There was somebody, I think, one used in North Korea. And the United States does the same thing.
In the Iraq War, we had Dick Cheney.
So there's that.
There's that. But probably the most famous of all is the topic of our podcast, the focus of our podcast, and that is Tokyo Rose.
I never heard of it.
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know how she's famous either.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Set up.
Was she on TV?
She was a stripper, yeah, I believe.
No, she wasn't. Tokyo she Rose.
Dick Clark's?
Tokyo Rose became synonymous with treason. And so I'm going to tell you the story of Iva Tagori, who is mostly became really identified as Tokyo Rose. But like with Axis Sally and Lord Ha Ha, she was there. Tokyo Rose was just the name given to her by the troops that listened to broadcast in the South Pacific during the Second World War. And there were at least 20 female broadcasters who spoke English that did these broadcasts. But the one that is most identified is Iva, and but she never went by the name of Tokyo Rose. None of the broadcasters went by that name. That was just the name given to them by the GIs. But let me tell you a little bit about Iva.
Tell me a little bit.
Thank you.
Sure.
Iva was born on July 4th, 1916. Isn't how ironic that is? She was born on July 4th, Independence Day, 1916, in Los Angeles, California.
It's crazy.
She was the daughter of Japanese immigrants. Her father had come to the United States in 1899 and her mother in 1913. And Iva was a typical American girl. She was a Girl Scout as a child. She was raised as a Methodist. Normal teenager, you know, wearing poodle skirts. Did they have poodle skirts back in those days?
I didn't know they had Japanese Methodists.
Well, she was.
That's crazy.
That is crazy.
But she excelled in school.
You know what throws me off?
And
what's that?
Black Brits.
Oh, it don't match.
It throws
it don't
me
match.
Off.
Yeah. May I continue?
Yes.
Thank
Go
you.
Ahead,
Thank
I'm
you
sorry.
So much. So Iva was a normal teenager.
But you know what I always thought, though, just if I could just continue with that thought. I see these boxes, and the big boxes, and every time I see a person, now he might be 6'6" and 280 pounds, but I see him, and I hear him talking with that funny voice, you know, because the Brits got kind of a effeminate tone to him. And I think, you know,
nobody, we have listeners in Great Britain.
I know it's kind of just a funny tone, and I think nobody that talks like that could whip my ass.
But they can.
They probably could.
I think they definitely
your
could.
Your colonel's been in a lot of situations before where he thought, no, he can't whip my ass.
Yeah.
And he has.
Yeah. So, Isn't that ironic? May I continue now?
If you're heading somewhere with this show.
Yes. Okay, poor Iva. Iva was a normal teenager who excelled in school and enjoyed music and sock hops. After attending a high school in Los Angeles, she graduated from the University of California, UCLA, with a degree in zoology. Her plan was to go to medical school. She spoke only English. And she, other than coming from, you know, other than having Japanese parents, had no real connection with Japanese culture because they didn't live in an area where there were a lot of other Japanese Americans. She was getting ready. She was working in her parents' store, and she was getting ready to go to medical school in 1941 when her aunt got sick, her aunt in Tokyo. So the family asked her to go to Tokyo to help her aunt for a few months, and that's what she did. So, and on July 5th, 1941, Iva set sail for Japan, where she was going to help her aunt and then come back and study medicine. She went to apply for a passport with the U.S. consulate with the U.S. State Department, and she was told that she didn't need one.
Yeah,
try to get around that today.
There's never a slow boat to Japan.
No, it's always to China.
Always to China.
Japan boats, they're fast.
And, it wasn't fast enough for her. Maybe the State Department told her that all she needed was an ID card, which she had, which did not turn out to be a case, which created, you know, made this situation worse. So Iva goes to Japan And she goes to Tokyo, and she helps out her aunt for a few months, and then it's time to come home. When she tries to make come home, she's told, hey, wait a minute, you need a passport. And she said,
sons of bitches.
Yeah, that's not what the State Department told me last time when I was in California, and they said, well, too bad, you need a passport. So she had to apply for a passport, and things were not very quick back in the day with the federal government. So,
because they're quicker now.
Yeah, a little bit quicker now anyway.
So she was basically interned in Japan.
Well, what happened was that she couldn't get a passport, and they were working on it. The State Department was working on her passport, but when that, as they were processing it, the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941, and she was stranded. She was SOL at that point because she didn't have her passport. She couldn't get back to the United States, and so she was out of luck. She was staying with her aunt, and so this Japanese government went to investigate her as an American spy, and they told her that if she could either give up her U.S. citizenship, denounce her U.S. citizenship, or she'd be placed in an internment camp. She said, basically, place me in an internment camp because I'm not giving up my U.S. citizenship.
Which is ironic, because had they sent her home,
she would have been in an internment camp.
Yeah, exactly. And her parents were put in an internment camp, and her mother died in an internment camp in the United States.
Well, that's a shame.
When asked why she would not give up her citizenship, Tagura said that a tiger does not change its stripes. I'm an American citizen, and I'm not going to change that. So she was to be put in an internment camp, but then the Japanese had a change of heart and said, we're not going to feed you three times a day. We're not going to shelter you. We're just going to say you're on your own, basically. So she was without a state. She was a stateless person.
It was like the Nazis. They just...
Yeah, so she...
Worski really couldn't understand them.
Well, had she had most of the people in her situation, and there were thousands, most of them denounced a U.S. citizenship, and they got ration cards so they could get food and whatever necessities they needed during the war in Japan. She did not receive any ration cards because she refused to denounce her American citizenship.
Is that when she became a burlesque dancer?
No, she did not become or a geisha or anything else, no.
How'd she support herself?
Well, that's a good question. She was staying with her aunt, and then her aunt was getting harassed by the government. They were coming in, and they're still thinking that she's a spy. They're harassing them, putting a lot of pressure, coming in and interrogating her aunt. You know, the whole neighborhood and everything were kind of, you know, questioning whether, you know, what her role there was. And so there was a lot of pressure. So she decided to leave her aunt's house, apartment, so her aunt could live in peace. And she got a job as a typist at a Japanese news agency, and then eventually got a second job as a typist at Radio Tokyo.
Tune in Tokyo.
Yeah. So she worked as a typist. She couldn't speak Japanese either, so she was struggling with the language as well.
I wonder what Japanese typewriters look like. Because they have like 800?
No, she was at English. She was an English typist.
Yeah.
It's a huge keyboard.
It's a big ass thing.
Yeah, she was typing
it's
English.
It's like a Volkswagen.
So, anyway, she's working at Tokyo Radio as a typist. In 1943, they brought in a few Allied prisoners of war who were captured, and one of them was a Australian Army officer named Major Charles Cousins. And he had a lot of experience in broadcasting before the war, but he was captured by the Japanese in Singapore. Cousins was tortured, and he was coerced into creating a radio broadcast. So the Japanese government wanted him to produce a radio broadcast to broadcast their propaganda targeted at American troops in the South Pacific.
Now, he had befriended Tagora, and she started to bring him and his the other POWs there that was forced to work at Tokyo Radio Tokyo, food and medicine and anything that she could to comfort them. She would smuggle them in at risking her own life to do so. So Cousins.
So she was a good guy.
She was a good guy. And Cousins told.
My guy wasn't.
Cousins told the Radio Tokyo, the government there, that he would work with them for the develop the broadcast if he could use Tagora as the announcer. Now she
so
refused.
Had something going on.
No,
his cousins and Tagora.
No, there was no. I don't think there's no record that they had any kind of romantic relationship.
Is there a record that they didn't?
No, but she ended up marrying a Portuguese guy. Let me continue. So after she refused to broadcast anti-American propaganda. She said she wouldn't do it. But finally, Major Cousin assured her that they would be writing a script and they would not say anything negative against the United States. That her role was basically to be just to play records and just be a personality on the air. So finally, she agreed to do it, and she took the name Orphan Anne, which is Anne short for announcer, and hosted what was the show became known as Zero Hour. And basically, she performed a role of a disc jockey. She just introduced records.
Like Wolfman Jack.
Like she was like Wolfman Jack. And
only with an accent.
Well, she spoke pretty good English. And the funny thing about her accent is that one of the reasons why the Cousins selected her
have an accent.
Is because he wanted her to he didn't want the Japanese government to select the announcer because they would get someone with a seductive type of voice, and she had a more of a comic type of voice, comedian type of voice. So that would, and basically what he wanted to do was to write a show that would make the Japanese think that they were propagating propaganda, and it would make, but American soldiers could kind of see through it and see, okay, this is a gag, that we've got someone on the inside.
So he was afraid they was going to get somebody on there to say, like, hey, Joe, you listen.
Me love you long time. Yeah, exactly.
Listen long time,
yeah.
Joe.
That's what his fear was. So,
and then they was all going to switch sides.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they were all going to fall in love with her.
Yeah.
What?
So,
I don't know.
That is that what they had in mind was a seductive, type of deal. But Anne did not have that type of voice. She had a husky, more of a comedic voice, and that's why
she smoked less.
And plus, he trusted her. Cousins trusted her because she had been so good to her. So anyway, so she started broadcasting and. Like I said, she never was called Tokyo Rose. She never called herself Tokyo Rose. It was just the name that the GIs had given her. Or not only her, but, the other 20 or so women who were also English-speaking doing this for Japan. Now, what they said in the other broadcast, what the other women may have said, far worse than what she said, because she would refuse to say anything negative. She would say things like, hey, Joe, this is your number one enemy, or things that were very like-hearted, but she would never, do the same thing.
Hey, Joe, you number one Chief Charlie.
She would never say things like Brandy, or like you were saying.
I'm sorry.
That like you were talking about, hey, your wife is home banging the milkman, or she would
that
never
was
do
mine.
Any, yeah, that she was would
mine.
Never do anything like that. So anyway,
Lord Hino actually said, "I am at your house banging your wife."
Right. Well,
was,
Tagora would never do anything
man.
Like that.
Dastardly.
She never did anything like that. In fact,
she was celibate the whole time.
One of the things that she did do, that they had gotten word that the Japanese were going to attack this particular air group on one evening, and she broadcasts and she said that, "Hey, listen to some music for you. You're going to be up late tonight because we're going to Japan is going to bomb the 43rd Squadron." So this tipped them off that they were going to be attacked. So it saved American lives. Anyway, while she was there, she married a Portuguese citizen.
Well, that'd be much of a propagandist, if you ask me.
Well, she wasn't trying to be a propagandist.
Yeah, if I was that Cousins guy, I would give her a poor evaluation.
Yeah. Well, anyway, no, Cousins was on her side.
Okay, if you were Tojo, I would be aggravated with the whole thing.
Okay, let me move on because this is getting long. But anyway, while she was there, she married a gentleman named Felipe de Aquino. He was Portuguese. And
they let her get married?
Yeah, they let her get married, and she married a Portuguese, but this is kind of a sad part of it because they were never together after the war. But anyway, the war ended, and so after the war ended, there was a big effort by newspaper reporters to find Tokyo Rose, this mythical character that was created by the American soldiers in the Pacific. And what they were frustrated, the reporters got frustrated because they couldn't find Tokyo Rose because she didn't exist. It was just a character, a fictional character. However, they did find Tagora, and she agreed to do an interview. They offered her $2,000 to do an interview with a newspaper talking about her role in the radio, Radio Tokyo. And she thought it would be great that she'll tell them what she did and, how she helped the U.S. cause during the war with what she was doing and helping the POWs, and she'll get money to go home with her husband so that they can have a child in the U.S.
So she admitted to being Tokyo Rose.
She did. She agreed to say that she was that she did broadcast. She never admitted to being Tokyo Rose, but she signed a statement to say that she did these broadcasts.
Because, you know, if they would have had a lineup and you'd have had to pick them out.
Yeah, it'd been difficult.
And
so
nobody picked them out.
So anyway, she never got the $2,000. The story was a hit job. The story came out that the headline was Tokyo Rose admits to treason for $6 a month, because that's what she got paid.
So basically, it was a surprise attack on Tokyo Rose.
Yeah, it was pretty disgusting. The army then conducted an investigation on her. And after a year of investigating it, found that there was no basis to any of it, that she was basically doing these broadcasts. She was playing a role as a disc jockey, and there was no treason or anything like that. And in August 1945, New York Times reported that there is no Tokyo Rose. It was just a name that was strictly made up by the GIs.
So this was kind of the Whitewater investigation.
Yeah, it was. There was nothing. There was nothing there. So, okay, cool. So now the war's over. She's been investigated. She's ready to come home, back to America, where she was from. She had grew up here. Okay, so what happens then? There was a radio announcer named Walter Winchell.
Very powerful man.
He was a very powerful man, and he had a radio show, and he had a news column. And he was a weasel.
He was also a cross-dresser.
Well, I'm not going to defend him in any way, shape, or form. But he was a muckraker, and he had a gossip column and a radio show, and he went on a witch hunt, and he made a big deal about Tokyo Rose, the traitor, returning to the United States. At the time, it was 1948. Harry Truman was in a tough political election. Remember the, race with Dewey, and Dewey wins and all that. It was a very close presidential election.
Dewey didn't win, though.
No, he didn't. But it was a close election, and there was this is beginning of the Red Scare era, where, the Alger Hiss trial was going on. And so there was, this whole hyper sensitivity toward anti-American activity,
And so there was the Justice Department decided that they were going to take another look at Tagura's case, and they end up indicting her for treason. On 8 counts of treason. And she went. They flew her to federal court in San Francisco. The jury went out and come back 3 times with a hung jury. They couldn't reach a verdict. The judge in the trial got very upset and told the jury, "You go back and you make a decision because we've spent, this is the most expensive trial in history." It was at the time, $500,000, which is like $4.5 million today.
So this was like the O.J. trial.
Yeah, it was the O.J. trial this time. But the foreman of the jury later said that, you know, nobody wanted to convict her. But they decided to convict her on one of the lesser counts. And they did. She was convicted of 1 count of treason. The jury thought that she would get off with time served. However, the judge sentenced her to 10 years in prison for treason and a $10,000 fine, which is...
What was the lesser charge they found her guilty of?
Yeah, I understand.
Exactly. He threw the book at her. The $10,000 fine, and that, in today's dollars, that would be $130,000. So it's a lot of money. So Tagura ended up going to prison, and she served a little over 6 years of her 10-year sentence. She got off for good behavior. And it later came out that 2 of the witnesses that testified against her at trial had lied. They were Japanese American citizens who were in the same boat that she was, and yet when they were asked to denounce their American citizenship, they did so. So they accepted the Japanese offer, and they wanted to come back to the United States. So the State Department cut a deal with them that if they testified against Tagura, that they would let them back in the U.S. and restore their U.S. citizenship. So that's what they did. And in 1974, they both came out and said that they had been coached 2 months prior to the trial onto what, how to testify. So Tagura goes to prison 6 years. She finally pays off her $10,000 fine in 1972. So she's been 6 years in prison, released on good behavior. At that point, she just tried to stay out of the spotlight. The sad part, one of the sad parts of this story is that at this point, she's a stateless person. She doesn't have U.S. citizenship. She lost her citizenship during when she was found guilty for treason. She couldn't leave the country. Her husband, who was a Portuguese national, was not given a visa to come to the country. So basically, she was never with her husband, and they end up having to, you know, divorcing. She tried to stay out of the press, although tabloids would follow her. Reporters would hide in her bushes on ice to get a glimpse of the notorious traitor. Finally, she settled and worked with her father's store in Chicago. And as I said, she was a stateless person. She couldn't leave the U.S. Yes, she wasn't a U.S. citizen. After these 2 guys, I'm going to destroy their names here, the 2 key witnesses in 1973, Kenichi Oki and George Mitsuchi, came forward and recanted their testimony and stated that they were forced to lie by the government and was coached what to say. The Japanese community got behind her. The American Japanese community shunned her when she got back.
They're like the Amish.
Yeah, well, they shunned her. But once these 2 guys came out and said that they did not, that they lied to get favor with the government, then they got behind her. And then finally, in 1977, President Ford, on his last day in office, gave Tagura a full pardon and restored her citizenship.
Was she still alive by then?
Huh?
Was she alive?
Yeah, she was still alive. She died at age of 90.
Damn.
In Chicago, age of 90 in Chicago of natural causes. On January 15, 2006, right before she died, the year she died, the World War II Veterans Committee, who sponsors a Memorial Day parade in Washington, D.C., and the National World War II Monument, gave her a citation for her spirit, love of country, and example of courage that she had given to her fellow Americans. And she, it was there, called the Edward Hurley Citizenship Award. And she, to Grace, said that was the most memorable day of her life. So she really got screwed.
I'd have told him, you know what, you a day late and a dollar short and you can kiss it, my ass.
Well,
6 years in prison and not a nary a one of you came forward to help me.
There's a, if you go on YouTube, you can see an interview of her on 60 Minutes. Did you see the interview with Maury Safer? And they asked her. They asked her that question. They asked her that why she was not bitter, and she said that she wasn't bitter, but she was disappointed that the truth didn't. You know, it was never told, and she, you know, she said basically, you know, a lot of bad, you know, bad things happen to people, good people, all the time. So she kind of took it.
Well, she didn't get the. She did not get the bomb dropped on the head.
No, she didn't.
Like
but she
a lot
lived.
Of the Japanese did.
Well, but she was there during the, you know, the firebombing of Tokyo. So I mean, she was at risk. But she, you know, she did her best to aid and comfort the POWs there in Japan where she was there, and you know, she refused to denounce her U.S. citizenship. But unfortunately,
and actually, Sally was in Dresden. I wonder if she was there when we was fired. We did a lot of firebombing.
We did
a lot of firebombing.
So anyway, that's the story of Tokyo Rose and Axis Sally and Lord Haha. So, do you guys have any final comments, well, Colonel?
Mine was just an asshole. He had a comment.
Brandy.
No further comments.
Do you feel compelled to say anything positive about Axis Sally?
She was a cookie. She would be a Horio. No, I don't.
Ooh, I like all right.
A Horio?
Thank you all for joining us again. And I promise next time we'll have some more
next
stories.
Next time we're going to be... Can we do more dead bodies?
Yeah,
we're going to do some dead bodies.
I like
bodies.
To do the dead bodies.
Yeah, Ed Gein was very popular. Thank you for all of you listening to the Ed Gein podcast. We'll get some more gory stuff in here for you shortly.
But this is important stuff to know.
It is. And
because Tokyo Rose has been slandered. It's just...
Yes, she was...
It's not fair.
It's not fair. Okay, thank you all for listening, and we will see you again real soon. Say goodbye.
Bye.
Good day, listeners.